Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly look at what's new, what's trending, and what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. I'm Callum Stoneman, back with you again. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. We always love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. Voice notes or written emails are always welcome. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about the new release of JAWS 2026. We'll be learning all about the new features in the screen reading software. We'll have an update from the RNIB Products for Life store if you're thinking of getting your Christmas shopping started. Joining us this week, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, the usual crew back. Natalie, what's caught your attention this week?
Couple of things, actually. So I'll go with the first one, which is notifications in JAWS. So I've been getting really irritating notification every single time I open a file on my laptop, and it can be a Word file, it could be a Excel file, it could be anything, and it didn't matter the platform, and it would tell me that the software was using my location in the background. Go to the address bar to turn this off. Well, I couldn't find the address bar. When I got somebody excited to look at it with me, they couldn't see the notification. And this has been going on for months, and I was getting ready to smash my laptop up into little pieces because it was driving me so crazy.
I'm interested because I've had this.
Have you? Oh, I was going mental.
Yeah, I've been having this as well.
And I say I discovered, I'm lying, somebody told me about it because they were researching it for, the issue for me as well, because I was getting nowhere. And if you do JAWS key plus space and then N for notifications and then N again, you get to notifications history, or you can go to JAWS utilities and down to notifications history. And in there, you'll find a list of literally all the notifications that JAWS has given you. And if you arrow down to that really, really annoying one, you can right-click applications key, Shift F10, whichever method you use, to bring up the little drop-down menu. And there's two options. One that says, don't show this in history. And the other one that says, create rule. And with create rule, you can change what that notification does. You can say, don't notify me of this at all. You can say, give me a sound instead. But I think you can also be specific to the program. So if there's something that annoys you in Word, but it's actually really useful in Outlook, then you can turn it off just in Word. And honestly, I could have kissed the person who told me about this. I felt so much happier. You have no idea how much it's been stressing me out. So I thought, I have to share this. This is one I have to share with the Tech Talk community.
This is good. I've been having this. I've only been having it over the last couple of weeks. And I mean, that's a good way to filter it out. But I don't understand where it's coming from. I mean, like you said, you open a Word document and then it says, this site is using your location. Go to the address bar to change it. It's like, but what are you on about? It's a Word file. Like, there is no address bar.
Or like, yeah. The other one is back up this document when you've actually just saved it. I've seen that one a lot as well. Back up this document. And then another one is from OneDrive, share your photos or whatever with OneDrive.
Oh, yeah.
And they just barge over the top of whatever it is you're doing. It's really annoying.
I mean, my assumption was that maybe it's Copilot, because it was the first time I noticed it was happening in Word. So I thought, okay, well, maybe Copilot, which is within Word, has got location access and that's where it's coming from. But it's happening, it seems to be happening all over the place. So I honestly don't, something's tracking me somewhere. Something's tracking my location. I don't know what it is. Hubert, anything from you this week?
So for me, it's to do with sports, surprising, I know, and it's live activities. So if you've ever tried the Apple's sports app, which is fairly newish still, you can follow various sports on it. But what you can also do is enable live activities for games, where basically you can follow a game on your lock screen with play-by-play updates, which if you can't actually watch the game for whatever reason, it really helps. So on Sunday, I had the family round, and kids were playing with toys, and I just kind of thought, well, there's an important American football game I needed to follow, because the result had an impact on the team I follow. Anyway, so I sat there on my lock screen or in a notification center, basically reading play-by-play updates on the game, and it was really well laid out, really well written. It was really accessible to the point where if I couldn't listen to the game, at least I could follow it in written text. I don't often use the live activities feature at all for most things. But for Apple Sports, I thought it was particularly helpful.
Is this built into Apple?
It is. So it's Apple's very own sports app. And when you download it, you can select your favorite sports. Within most sports, you can select your favorite teams. And once their game starts, your phone will chime and you will get a live activity feed on your lock screen with basically play-by-play. So every time a different play happens, you can get an update on your lock screen or notification center where you can actually follow the game. I don't use it all the time. If I'm actually listening or watching a game, I don't bother with it. But in times when this is the only option you kind of have, it makes it a lot easier because it's actually laid out in accessible ways. I've seen other apps like FlashScore do play-by-play kind of updates, and it's not always that accessible. You can't always really tell what's going on, whereas with this, everything's accessible and very clearly written, so you can actually quickly be able to get the idea of what's just happened in the game. I've not tried it with all sports. I've tried it with American football, our English Football League, and I've also tried it with basketball and ice hockey, and it works well for these sports. I've not tried it to see if it works for, say, tennis matches, but tennis is supported.
Oh, I'd love to give that a go.
Well, tennis is supported, Jackie, so you can do so. I know they were on the Apple Sports. You could follow the latest World Tour Finals events. So I've not tried it with tennis yet, but I'm keen because basketball commentary on TV is incredibly difficult to follow. But if you've got the live activities going along on your lock screen, you can actually tell what's happening very clearly to the point where the TV commentary is almost obsolete.
So you just download this from the App Store, Apple Sports, is it?
Yes, so you download Apple Sports, you then select your favourite teams, your favourite sports, and the next time your favourite team's game starts, your phone will bring up a live activity feed, and you don't have to use it. You can just clear it like a normal notification, but equally, you can just follow it if you, for example, can't actually watch or listen to the game.
I'm going to give this a go after we finish this, because this sounds really good. The live activities thing as well, that would, I imagine if you've got a pro phone, that would appear in your dynamic island as well, wouldn't it? So you could kind of feel up there and...
It does, but obviously on the lock screen notification center kind of side of things, you do get a lot more detail. I think on the dynamic island itself, you just get, I think, the score, which is still decent, if that's all you want. But if you actually go to your lock screen on a notification center, you will get considerably more detail, play-by-play kind of updates.
Fair enough. Well, I'm off to download that in a minute. Jackie, what have you got?
I got an email, an advertisement from Synaptic this week. And apparently this flyer says, we've updated our Plus Watch to take hands-free convenience to a whole new level with powerful new speech features and our built-in chatbot. Now you can simply talk to your Plus Watch to ask questions, send messages, make calls or set timers, all with just your voice. Smartwatch Plus, £299. Synaptic Smartwatch Lite. The Plus smartwatch includes everything in the Lite version, plus advanced features of control, chatbot assistance, health track, and communication, giving you greater independence wherever you are. So, if you're interested in those watches, get in touch with Synaptic.
These watches actually sound pretty cool. I mean, I wouldn't buy these because, obviously, I've got the Apple Watch, but... One thing that's a little bit weird with these, and I don't know if these Gen 2s are the same, but when it comes to, because you can do phone calls on that, but the thing that puts me off a little bit is that you have a separate SIM card for your watch, which would mean that you would have essentially two numbers. So you would have a number for your phone and a number for your watch, which just feels a bit weird to me. And strictly speaking, on the cellular versions of the Apple Watch, that is how it works. You do actually, if you dig in, you do have a number that's specific to your watch, but of course you never give that out because it ties into your phone's cellular thing anyway. But that feels a bit weird to me. But then again, for people who, and I wonder if this is the demographic they're going for, people who don't necessarily have a smartphone can still get, especially with the voice assistant now, that kind of smartphone-like functionality.
Yeah, I think that's where they're targeting the sales, to be honest, at people who they don't have a smartphone, they don't want a smartphone, but they might like a watch that talks but does a few other things as well. So I think that's where they're going with these watches. And like you, it would put me off because I don't want two numbers. You know, I'd be people phoning me on the watch. What? Oh, right. Okay, you phoned me on that number. I just it would annoy me. So
yeah.
But yeah, that's what's happening with Synaptic.
They do sound like really cool watches though, and at a good price as well.
And they're visually appealing. Apparently, you can adjust the contrast and all that kind of thing as well. So I believe they are useful for people with some sight. So it is, if you're interested in that kind of thing, it is worth giving them a call.
Very interesting. Well, another busy week as always. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk. This time of year is always a busy time for Vispero as they release new versions of, or new major versions of their software, so JAWS, ZoomText and Fusion, the ones that we all know and love. And joining me now to have a bit of a chat about what's new in these versions is Stuart Lawler, back with us again from Sight and Sound Technology, who are, of course, the UK distributors of JAWS. Stuart, welcome back to Tech Talk.
Hey, Callum. Great to be here. Nice to be back on the show.
So let's just get straight into it then, I guess. What can we expect in JAWS 2026? What's new?
Yeah, well, 2026 was released a couple of weeks ago. I think a lot of people have been installing the update already. If you have an SMA, a valid SMA, of course, you can install that. And I know some people have been trying out the 40-minute mode as well. And I suppose a lot of the new stuff in 2026, or at least a lot of the big new stuff, centers around, you won't be surprised to hear, Callum, AI.
No, what a surprise.
And one of the... And you're not, no surprise. So one of the ones that was in one of the features that was in as part of the early adopter program in the end of 2025 was this Page Explorer. And the idea behind this, Callum, I don't know if it has happened to you, but it certainly happens to me sometimes. You go onto a page with a whole load of what might be perceived sometimes as clutter, and you're trying to get a snapshot of what is this page about. Give me a sense of the orientation, the headings, the links. What kind of things can I do on this page? With this Page Explorer function, JAWS is using AI to give you an overview of, you know, the structure of the page. This page has, these areas. There are links, there are headings, there are various different regions, and you just get a snapshot of it. So you can do that on a page by pressing the JAWS key, Shift and the letter E for explore. And it takes a couple of seconds and it will come back with a detailed page summary, which you can read in the virtual viewer. And then you can press the escape key when you're finished.
I've been having a bit of a play with this. And to be fair, the summaries that it gives you are pretty good. I mean, I was trying it on a few websites that I knew and I was asking questions. And what I found, I don't know about you, but if you do a screen share on kind of Copilot or ChatGPT or something and you say, okay, where is this button? Where is the download button? It will say, well, the download button is towards the top right of the page. But that doesn't always help you. Whereas I've done it on, I cheated a little bit. I tried it out on the Freedom Scientific website, which of course is accessible. But it kind of said, you know, the download button is just after the first heading level 2 of the page. So to navigate to it quickly, go to the links list and type in download, or you can press the number 2 and then down arrow a couple of times. Really good, like specific details on that.
Yeah, it's giving you contextual information from the perspective of a screen reader user. And you just mentioned being able to ask questions there. So you can drill into the page structure a little bit more and ask it more information. So, okay, tell me about the, you know, as you said, where is the download button, for example? Download button is below, you know, the heading two, makes these things easier to find and gives you information that you understand in screen reader speak, if we want to call it that.
Yeah, and just to be clear on this, I think it's worth noting, this can only tell you about the page, kind of, at least at the minute. It can't kind of take actions. You know, you can't say to it, can you click this link?
It can't take actions, no. And I know a lot of people have been suggesting that. In fact, I was at a meeting a couple of weeks ago and it was suggested by a couple of people, and it's something that I've been interested in as well. I'd say watch this space, because I think Vispero are kind of interested in doing that too. So who knows where this feature will go in the future.
Interesting.
So yeah, that's definitely a good one, and one that I think people are going to get useful, one that people are going to get a lot of use out of, rather. The second one, Callum, which I think is equally, if not in some cases more useful, is the graphics labeler. So you will remember, for pretty much as long as we've been using JAWS, you could press the JAWS key with the letter G and create a custom label for an unlabeled button or graphic on the screen. You know, how many times have you come onto maybe a media player, an embedded media player in a website, and there's button, 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 and you say, oh, which one is play? Which is stop? How do I fast forward this thing?
Yeah.
So now the graphics labeler has turned into an AI graphics labeler and uses AI to label buttons, and it is incredibly good. I was using it the other day on a system that we have where there were some unlabeled links that I was trying to get around, and I used the graphics labeler, and within a couple of seconds comes back with a label on the link. Same for, I found an inaccessible media player recently, again labeling the transport controls. So really handy feature. And all you have to do is press your JAWS key and G.
Very nice. Yeah, and it saves those labels, doesn't it, as well? So if you go back to it.
It does.
They're already there.
Yep. And if you do it again, then if you do the JAWS key and G on a label that you've created, you can change that label yourself if you want. Or you can get rid of the label. You can delete the label.
Okay, very nice. Yeah, definitely worth it. That's something that I've not tried yet, but I am going to. Yeah, there's a lot of unlabeled buttons in our works HR system, so I'll be keen to see how it handles that.
They tend to have those unlabeled buttons, don't they? The one I was trying it on the other day was also a HR system, and trying to put in annual leave, there's lots of unlabeled buttons. So yeah, I found it very, very useful there. The other one for Braille users is that there is JAWS Braille in support is now implemented for the Braille eMotion device. So that's the, well, it's still relatively new HIMSS 40-cell Braille display that's been around for about a year and a half. So you'll have an updated Braille driver, updated Braille key maps in JAWS 2026 for anyone who wants to try having a play with that. And of course, multi-line Braille is continuing to get better in JAWS 2026 and to mature in JAWS 2026 with support for the DotPad and the Monarch.
So for the Braille eMotion, is there anything in particular that people need to do to get that working? Because Braille, the HIMSS products aren't HID compatible yet, are they? HID being the protocol where you can you don't have to worry about drivers, you can just connect and it should just pick it up, whereas I think HIMSS haven't quite adopted that yet.
So once there is HID compliance for USB, not for Bluetooth. So you're right.
Okay.
It will only work in HID once it's connected as a HID compliant Braille display under USB.
Okay, fair enough.
I think they are looking into the possibility of doing that on Bluetooth. And of course, when they do, that's going to, again, be much easier. But at the moment, that Braille in function, that JAWS Braille in functionality that we talked about for that Braille display, is only on HID when connected through USB.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I almost want to apologise for going down this road, but we do have to kind of touch on pricing. I know we had you on a few weeks ago to kind of clarify what was going on with the pricing, but I think it's kind of worth revisiting where we are in terms of, if now that this release is out, obviously with it being a major release, if people want to upgrade, can you just, best you can, just kind of summarize where we're up to with that and what people should do if they're looking at upgrading?
Yeah, sure. And I suppose the first thing I'll say is that there have been some changes since last time we spoke. So maybe let's go through the changes first of all. So the last time we spoke, Callum, when we were chatting with Jackie on your podcast, there was a deadline of the 31st of October for anybody who wanted to get an upgrade to the current version of JAWS from whatever version you were coming from. That deadline has now been extended to the 31st of December. So if you haven't upgraded yet and you want to upgrade, you can do so without having to buy a new license or a new subscription. When you buy an upgrade, that upgrade has to be sold with a software maintenance agreement, SMA, which will run for 2 years from the date of purchase. So in other words, you will get all of the updates for the next 2 years. After the 31st of December, if you are three steps or less behind the current version, so if you're on 23, 24 or 25, you will be able to purchase an upgrade and an SMA until the end of Q1 of 2026, so till the end of the 31st of March. And after that date, if you still haven't upgraded, you will have to purchase a new license. So I suppose what I am saying is anybody who's thinking of upgrading and who's on a very early version of JAWS, maybe you're on 2020, maybe you haven't upgraded in quite a while and you're thinking about doing it, you have a little bit more time now till the 31st of December. If you're on 23, 24, 25, and you're having a think about it, you at least now have until the end of next March. And I know this is very complicated, Callum, so I hope I really have tried to explain it as clearly as I can.
Yeah, it does make sense. What's the feedback been, you know, since this pricing? Because I think the more we talk about it, it seems to be clearing up, but then you get into these upgrade deadlines and you can do this until the 31st of December and you can do this bit until Q1. I think that's the bit that's kind of throwing people now, not necessarily the subscription part.
So I think if I could probably best summarize the feedback and the kind of queries we were getting, people were anxious, I think, yeah. Because, oh gosh, I need to do this in a certain time. And we all know that prices are continuing to rise, you know, cost of living, just, you know, general costs. And this is another cost that somebody has to think about. I often talk about, Callum, the kind of three different types of screen reader users when we talk about these changes in JAWS. There's people who say, I'm just going to buy it. I'm going to buy it right now because I want to always use the latest and greatest version of JAWS. And then there's people who say, I am not going to buy it. I'm going to switch to another screen reader or go to a free screen reader, and that's absolutely fine. But then there's the people who say, I've been using JAWS for so long, I don't feel I want to learn another screen reader, but I'm not sure I can justify this purchase right now. So we've been trying to, I suppose, listen to that feedback and work out, and I suppose that was why the time window got extended a little bit for everybody. And for people who maybe have lapsed a year or two behind, at least they have a few more extra months going into next year to do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. On a similar note, actually, regarding the pricing, people may have seen, if you've been looking at social media or some of the forum posts, they may have seen limitations on the AI features. I think specifically the Page Explorer, where people on the home annual license, which is in the US, don't have access to that. That doesn't affect UK users, does it?
No, it doesn't. So the home annual license is a special license in the US where an end user can purchase JAWS as a special subscription for, it was $99. I think it might have gone up slightly more recently. But you're quite right. Some of the features that we have over here by default, specifically the AI features like Page Explorer, are being restricted, are turned off for that user base. And there is another subscription model that they have introduced in the US for home users. So, you know, I suppose over time, those people will, if they wish, will graduate onto the newer subscription model, or if they choose to stay with home annual, they will have a slightly restricted operation of the screen reader, and I think that will continue to be the case. But as you say, it doesn't impact anybody in this part of the world.
So there's no limits. If we're in the UK, there's no limits on how often we can use this, or there's no need to get another subscription.
No,
No.
not at all.
And the same thing with that there's been talk of needing to create a Vespero account or a Freedom Scientific account in order to use this. Again, that's another thing that's US only, isn't it?
US only, and to be honest, I don't see that happening here for a while. They need to look at, data protection processes in this part of the world. So they're really rolling it out in the US first to see how it goes, to work out what will be the benefits of having a Vespero account and the things they might do with it in the future. But yes, not something for anybody over here to worry about for the foreseeable future, I would say.
Okay, and if people are not sure what their upgrade kind of steps are and what they need to do, how can they get in contact with you guys to get the results for them, basically?
Yeah, sure. And I suppose we're really saying to people, if you're unsure or if you just need to have a conversation about it, do contact us. So you can phone us on 01604 798070, or you can email info at sightandsound.co.uk, and we have five or six people on the sales team who are talking to people every day and dealing with these queries, and they'll be very happy to help you wherever you are on your user journey of JAWS.
Fantastic. Well, there you go. Some of the new features there, the AI page explorer, the graphics labeler is now using AI, and a lot of braille improvements as well. So are you using any of these features? Let us know how you're finding them. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Stuart Lawler from Sight and Sound, thanks so much for joining us.
Cheers, Callum. Thanks, Emil.
The holidays are very much coming. Still a few weeks to go, however. If you would like a chance to prepare early with certain Christmas goodies, well, our very own RNIB shop can help you with just that. And joining me to tell me more, we have Charlie Jarvis and Claire Maxwell from our very own RNIB products shop. Thank you both for joining us. Claire, let's start with you. Can you give us a bit of a kind of flavour of what sort of Christmas-based products you've got available in the shop at the moment?
We've got a huge bumper range of Christmas product this year, and that includes things like your cards, your wrap, your gift bags, your gift tags, all the way through to decorations and, of course, Christmas gift ideas. So we've got a huge range to choose from. I'll just talk through a couple of things that stand out to me. Our inclusive Christmas cards have been a hit over the last few years, and we've added in a few more packs this year. These are packs of inclusive cards with large print, a braille message inside, and of course, most importantly, a tactile image on the front. So we've also added in about five more different packs of these, and they come in packs of 10 with five different designs. Then we've also got things like our gift wrap, which is great. So you can get everything in one place. We've got our gift tags, and this is a new idea. These are tactile gift tags. And the idea is that you buy a pack of these. You've got six sheets in a pack, and there's six different designs on each sheet. You've got six stickers. And what you can do with these is you can attach them onto, say, for example, you've got three or four or even six people you need to buy presents for, and you can't tell whose it's whose under the Christmas tree if you're like me. And you can attach, say, one set of stickers to one person's presents and another set to another person, so you can quickly identify them. And then there's no fighting, no mix-up on Christmas Day. Then we've also got in the range this year, we've got our Christmas decorations, and we've added in some tactile ones for a bit of fun, so you can hang these on your tree. We've got six different designs. They're all shaped, they're all beautifully coloured, and they have a tactile outline on them, and some also have a braille message as well. And then most importantly, our gift ideas. So we've got a huge range of gifts. We've got lots of beauty ideas from Kath Kitson and William Morris, and of course RHS. So you can choose from bath bombs or things like body creams, scented candles, etc. We've also got a range of really funky, cool kitchen ideas, so aprons, tea towels, things like that, mugs as well. And then we've also got, you know, things like jewellery, which we've added into the range this year. And of course, most importantly, we've still got our tactile watches, phones, and other gifting ideas in the category. So it's always worth having a look if you're running short of ideas this year.
That is pretty impressive, a very impressive Christmas range indeed. Now, one of the main big topics during, well, every Christmas is advent calendars, and I always find they can be a bit tricky, and you can't always get a fully accessible advent calendar, but, well, once again, R&IB Shop has delivered, Charlie, because, well, we have one.
We do, so we have two fully accessible beauty advent calendars, one from William Morris and one is Kath Kidson. Each number has a brailled number sticker overlay, and then on the inside it has a Navi lens code that you can scan, and it will tell you exactly what's behind each door, what the ingredients are, and the user instructions. So anyone that buys one, whether it's for yourself or a gift for somebody else, could be confident in knowing that it's fully accessible and you can be independent in using it.
Now, these are all great products, Claire, and obviously we want to make sure that people can take advantage of them. But just in case, are there any deadlines or limits people need to be aware of before they go and get their hands on these Christmas goodies?
No, really just up until Christmas. So we do have our Christmas order dates, which are on our website. So it's always worth checking on there so that we can make sure we deliver these for you before Christmas. Obviously, it's until stocks last. So do get in there quick if there's something that really takes your fancy and you want to get that before they run out.
That is brilliant. Now, if people would like to get their hands on these wonderful products, where can they go to do that?
They can go to shop.rnib.org.uk and have a look in our Christmas category.
Thank you very much for all that, Claire and Charlie. We look forward to hearing how well these items go out. I'm sure they will sell out pretty soon. Yes, if you want to get your hands and on some Christmas goodies and, well, prepare early for the festive period, then do go to our very own shop to do just that. I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again soon. But for now, Claire Maxwell and Charlie Jarvis from our very own R&IB shop, thank you very much for joining us here on R&IB Connect Radio.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
How can making videos or podcasts or blogs enhance your sense of well-being and connect you with other people? The University of Bournemouth is running workshops with blind and partially sighted people to learn just this. Here's Amelia with more.
Bournemouth University have a new project to help more blind and partially sighted people engage in digital media, like blogging, vlogging, video making, podcasting, and setting up film clubs. In partnership with Beyond Sight Loss, Dorset Blind Association, and the Thomas Pocklington Trust, they're conducting research and developing a model to support blind and partially sighted people to use digital media for well-being and socialising. We're joined today by Dr. Catalin Briller, Principal Lecturer in Film and Television, to learn more. Hi, Catalin. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, Mila. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
So how did this project first begin?
So the idea was part of many years of research on how media can create positive change for disabled people. And I also made a documentary about a blind painter called The Terry Fragments. And I occasionally volunteer for blindness charities. So I really wanted to explore how media like videos, social media, graphic design, and using AI could improve the lives of blind and visually impaired people. And then when I talked to the wider community and service providers, I soon realized that there wasn't really much work on how blind people use media to support their well-being. there was almost no research on this either, and also no training opportunities for media creation specifically targeted to blind people. So with support from the British Academy, we teamed up with the Thomas Pocklington Trust, Beyond Sightloss, and Dorset Blind Association to explore how media creation can make a real difference in people's lives.
And how can using digital media help to improve blind and partially sighted people's well-being and social inclusion?
I will first talk a bit about the project so that people understand what the impact was. Our workshop series focused mainly on filming, editing, and sharing videos, but also creating graphics and using AI like ChatGPT to assist with all these. All workshop participants used their own smartphones or tablets, and they used apps that are free and across platforms like Apple and Android because we really wanted the training to be as inclusive and sustainable as possible. The workshops were online and in person, so they were hybrid, and they included a confidence-building session, a session on online safety, one on preparing news stories, three sessions hands-on media creation, and one last session to celebrate and showcase the outcomes. And we also had several surveys and interviews with our participants to measure how the training improved their well-being. And this was really important to us to measure this and not just to assume it happened. Our results show that all 16 workshop participants experienced a confidence boost, and also they all had a significant boost in skills, especially filming and editing videos, adding music and voiceover, creating graphics, and experimenting with AI. Many participants also felt more motivated, purposeful, and recognized after the training, so they felt more acknowledged and empowered. For instance, one of them started for the first time making and sharing personal videos with her family, which really changed the way she was perceived in her family because before she was seen as someone who cannot create visual media. A third of our participants use their new media skills now for professional purposes, like creating job opportunities, advocacy, and community volunteering. For instance, one participant creates flyers, business cards, and learning materials for her tutoring business. Another has created a mock showreel for his stand-up comedy business. Yet another has made a promotional video for her local church. But above all, what this project has shown is that digital media creation opens up a world of connection. It lets people share experiences, tell their own stories, and challenge how society sees blindness. When someone makes or shares a video or even takes part in a social media group, it's not just about learning skill, it's about belonging, expressing identity, and finding purpose. So for many of our participants, using media was also a way to reach others, to feel seen and valued, and to connect with the wider community.
What are some of the main barriers that you learned about from your workshop participants for using digital media?
So there were quite a few challenges. Accessibility is the obvious big one that many apps, for instance, and editing tools aren't fully compatible with screen readers or magnifiers. But there's also a big lack of confidence and opportunity. So some people told us they didn't even know where to start, or they felt media spaces were only for sighted people and they would be judged accordingly. There can also be social barriers like not feeling supported or being underestimated or feeling ashamed. One of the participants said that when he was filming short videos outside, people started laughing at him because they saw that he is blind and couldn't believe that he can film videos. So all these challenges resulted in us finding it very difficult to recruit workshop participants. Luckily, in the end, we managed to convince people that media creation is not just possible, but also beneficial for blind and visually impaired people. And our community partners were really helpful in helping us to recruit participants and convince them to do the training. And then, of course, our training focused on creating an inclusive learning environment where everyone feels safe and listened to. And we had both blind and visually impaired and sighted tutors working together.
Sounds like it was a really positive experience, and you're continuing this project as well. You've touched on some of the things that you've learned from the workshops, but were there any other major takeaways for you?
Oh, indeed. We learned a lot from the workshops. Just to be transparent, I'm not blind or visually impaired, so I work with a whole team which was mixed abilities. So some were sighted, some were blind, some were visually impaired. So for me, it was a real experience to put this project together and very, very humbling. The biggest takeaway was that accessibility isn't just about technology. It's also about how people teach and learn together. So when sessions were well structured and inclusive, participants' confidence grew massively. They supported each other, shared creative ideas, and even started thinking about how to use Mia to help others. One participant, for example, said it gave them a new way of seeing, which I think sums up the project quite beautifully. So media creation became not just a skill for them, but a form of well-being.
Were there any standout bits of software that people really enjoyed using or that your participants have found to be really accessible?
Yes, so we used mainly iMovie on iPhones or iPads because most people had iPhones or iPads. For the people who used Android, they used CapCut or some other apps, but we found that iMovie works quite well with screen readers. The problem was that iMovie has different menu setups if you compare on an iPad and on an iPhone. So that was a bit challenging, but we had assistants walking around the workshops and helping participants with finding the menu items they needed. When it came to actual filming, one of the biggest challenges was to enable blind and visually impaired people to quote, see, unquote, what they're looking at, what the camera's looking at. So we used Seeing AI, which is a free AI app that basically describes what the camera looks at. So basically, the user has to take a still picture of where the camera is pointing or the phone is pointing, and then Seeing AI describes it in high detail, even colors and textures and shapes. And by doing this, they can adjust the framing and composition of the image, and for example, also making sure there are no other people in the frame if they don't want to film other people and only, for example, focus on landscapes. And then afterwards, we used ChatGPT as the main AI tool to create graphics like captions, logos, cartoonized selfies, which then were imported into iMovie to be overlaid over the video. So iMovie, Seeing AI, and ChatGPT were our main apps. And the participants could also experiment with actual equipment, filmmaking equipment like selfie sticks and ring lights and tripods, which the tutors brought to the workshops so they could touch them and use them. And that's more or less what we use. But we would like to expand the choice of software in the future because there's a lot around. CapCut especially is a really good software that unfortunately you have to subscribe to it and it's not free, but you can create a lot of graphics and videos using AI. One of our participants, in fact, she made a really brilliant video with CapCut in which she cartoonized herself through AI because she didn't want to show her real face. And then she's talking about an episode in her life where she had a brain tumor removed. So it's a very moving story. And it comes across quite well through her cartoonized selfie. Before we started the project, we had a survey with the wider community and we asked them what kind of skills they would like to learn. And we gave them a whole list like video making, podcasting, blogging, photography. And almost all of them said that they wanted primarily to learn how to make videos. Podcasting was much, much lower in the list of preferences, which is why we focused on video making. We think that this is because social media is so visual nowadays, especially TikTok videos, YouTube videos, Facebook shorts, that blind and visually impaired people really want to participate in these visually dominated platforms. This project really showed the value of AI, especially apps like Seeing AI, ChatGPT, Canva, which is a really brilliant platform to create presentations and graphics and videos. So AI has really been a game changer. And of course, AI is not perfect. It has implicit bias. So ChatGPT, for example, has implicit bias when you ask it to generate ideas. You have to be aware of the biases. You have to know how to use it. So we taught people how to write prompts, how to check for implicit bias, how to make sure that It doesn't stereotype blind people even further, and so forth. So AI was a real, real game changer, which we really want to develop in the next project.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And for the online safety section of the workshops, are there any key things for people to consider?
Yes, so this was held by Amy Kavanagh, who is a disability consultant on online safety. She's visually impaired herself, so she has lived experience. And she talked about how to keep safe online. So she covered things like how to prevent cyberbullying and not to fall victim to scams, for instance, clickbaiting. She was also talking about copyright. And that's very important. If you point your camera somewhere and people don't want to be in frame, you may not notice if you can't see if they're in frame or not. So seeing AI can tell you if someone is in frame or not. If you want to film someone, then you need to ask for consent. They have to sign a consent form. So these kind of things were covered in the online safety session. So we have just completed the training and are putting together the report for the funder in which we evaluate the impact on the community. It also includes a guide for organizations and educators to help design media activities that really support well-being for blind and visually impaired people. We are also planning new workshops that build on what worked best, and we want to train more facilitators and peer leaders so the model can spread. We also want to expand our list of partners and collaborators and do this media training on a wider, even national level. So if anyone is interested in being involved, please do get in touch.
Absolutely. And where is the best place for organisations that want to partner with you or people that are interested in taking part in the workshops to get in touch with you?
You can find updates and materials through our Bournemouth University website. And we also have a Facebook group called Blindness and Media Engagement, which is a private group. And it's great for exchange with other people and finding media creation tutorials and also uploading your own work if you want feedback or commenting on other people's work. And we will keep people updated about future workshops on the Facebook group. We'll also be releasing short videos by our participants and an accessible version of our final report very soon. And of course, we would love to hear from anyone who wants to take part or share their own experiences with us.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Catalin Briller, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio, and we'll look forward to hearing more about your project in the future.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now on RNIB Tech Talk, it's time to talk accessibility and accessibility advocacy and hear some stories regarding that today. I am joined by Aidan Akers, who has very much been doing that. Aidan, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So for listeners that, you know, haven't met you or, you know, don't know you, how would you describe yourself and what drives your passion for accessibility?
Disability and accessibility advocate from South East London and a student at a local visual impairment college. Since my sight began deteriorating rapidly about a year ago, I've been learning to adapt. I started using my cane in February and started learning Braille in March, which really opened my eyes to how many barriers visually impaired people face. I also have cerebral palsy, PVL, autism, tremors, epilepsy and speech differences, so I've experienced accessibility challenges from lots of angles.
Now, you've worked with Google on a little project. Can you give us a little bit of information on that?
I've been in contact with Google's accessibility team, giving feedback about how people with speech differences interact with voice assistants. I shared my own experiences of how hard it can be when voice assistants don't recognize what I'm saying, and how frustrating it feels to be misunderstood by something that means to help. The project was about making these technologies more inclusive so that people like me who sound a little different can still use them with confidence and independence.
As well as technology, you also have quite a passion for Braille and tactile signage. How well do you think public spaces are moving on that front?
So I think there's a still long way to go. Some places are starting to include Braille signs or tactile maps, but it's not consistent. You might find one accessible building that then the next has nothing. It can make navigating places like train stations or shopping centres quite stressful. I'd love to see a national standard where every public space is designed to be accessible to people with sight loss.
You've mentioned menus as well, restaurant menus. How important is it that, you know, restaurants and cafe offer, you know, large print, but as well as that, also offer Braille menus to customers?
I think it's very important because not everyone can read the small print, and having to rely on someone else can be a bit frustrating.
Now, when it comes to, you know, making a change, you know, a lot of it involves, you know, giving feedback to various places. Now, when you've given feedback to various, you know, places like restaurants, cafes, to raise accessibility issues, you know, how receptive are they, or do you have to convince them quite a lot? Is there more convincing to do?
It's a mix. Some businesses are really open and even thank me for pointing things out. Others are a bit hesitant or don't see accessibility as a priority until it's explained to them. I've learned that raising awareness kindly but confidently can make a real difference. Sometimes it just takes one conversation to change how a place sees accessibility.
You are very active locally, but you also have an eye on national advocacy. So my question to you is, you know, what would you like to see in the UK's access policy and awareness?
I'd love to see disabled people included in every stage of policy making, design and technology development, not just an afterthought. We need stronger accessibility laws, more consistent enforcement and better education about inclusion in schools, workplaces and local councils. Ultimately, my goal is to help make the UK a truly accessible and inclusive country for everyone. We're barriers are not exception, not the norm.
Now, for people listening who do want to make a difference, whether it's big or small difference, you know, what is the one kind of small thing people can do to make spaces more inclusive?
Start with awareness. If you see something that isn't accessible, mention it politely but confidently. You don't have to be disabled to be an advocate. Sometimes allies make a huge difference by speaking up. Even small actions like describing what's happening to someone with sight loss or checking your website's accessibility can make a big impact.
Now, looking ahead for yourself, you know, what's next for you in any of your upcoming projects that you're particularly excited about?
My plan to keep working on advocacy projects, continuing to connect with organisations like Google and local councils, and raising awareness through interviews like this. Long term, I just want to keep learning, sharing, and helping to make positive change.
Thank you very much, Aidan Akers, for coming on and sharing your story here on RNIB Connect Radio.
And that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for your company. If you've got any questions or anything you want to share, if you want to get in touch, please do. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Our inbox is always open. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavelkovich, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.